We are at item 11. This should be a very interesting conversation. This is Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Because there are representatives in the audience from other agencies, I would like to propose that this be a bit informal. If you have questions of the speakers, just raise your hand and you may ask those questions. We do ask that you fill out the speaker's card afterwards so that we have that for the record. Ms. Kumyanjin?
I'm going to invite our friend Rich Booth back up to the podium, who's going to introduce this item and let us know who our guest speakers are today.
Thank you, Beth. Rich Booth, Unit Supervisor of the TMDL Basin Planning Unit and person interested in recent groundwater legislation, as I think we all are. Today you're going to hear from a few speakers that are very well versed in this recent groundwater legislation. This is known as the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. It's actually more than one piece of legislation by the California legislature. It provides a new framework to support local groundwater management. Implementation will be through formation of local groundwater sustainability agencies you'll hear more about. They are to develop groundwater sustainability plans for their basin. These sustainability plans will rely on the new tools and authorities that SGMA grants to these groundwater sustainability agencies. This morning you're going to hear first from Brian Moniz. He is with the Department of Water Resources. I asked him not to prepare a PowerPoint presentation per se, but to spend a few minutes talking about the Department of Water Resources' role in this significant legislation, and of course to be available to answer questions from the audience or for the board members. After Brian speaks, then we'll hear from Eric Ekdahl, who is with State Board, and he's head of the Groundwater Management Unit there at State Board, newly formed management unit just for this effect. And also he's brought with him Sam, and I hope I can say your name right, Bolin-Bryan. Sam Bolin-Bryan is here, also from State Board in Eric's unit, who is specifically Region 6 liaison for this SGMA Act. So, per suggestion from a board member, I sent out an email inviting the water agencies that I and other staff could think of to make sure they are aware that we're having this presentation and the availability of these speakers, and to ask questions of them and to hear your comments. And there are many agencies in the audience today, so I'm hoping we can have a good interaction back and forth, almost like a workshop setting. The folks I invited included Mojave Water Agency, Palmdale Water, Eastern Sierra Community Service District, Indian Wells Valley Water District, South Tahoe PUD, Placer County, Truckee Donner PUD, LA Department of Water and Power, City of Bishop, Antelope Valley, Los Angeles Community Service District, those are the ones that I invited. Some, of course, are here, and some couldn't make it. So, the PowerPoint presentation that Eric Ekdahl will present, hard copies are on the back here if you want to have those. And late editions, that concludes my introduction, and I invite Brian to speak.
Well, thank you, Rich, for inviting me here to speak, and thank you to the chair for having me come out here to speak on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. My name is Brian Moniz. I'm with the Department of Water Resources. I am our regional coordinator out of our Southern Region office that's in Glendale. Part of that role as a regional coordinator is I get involved with various department programs, one of those being the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or our Groundwater Sustainability Program. I also have my hands in our drought response throughout the state, specifically the Southern Region. And I also manage our grant programs out of our Southern Region office, that being the Prop 84 Planning and Implementation Grants, as well as Prop 1E Stormwater Flood Management Grants, and the Local Groundwater Assistance Grants as well. That would be the AB 30 grants. So I'm going to talk to you just a little bit about the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, as well as the Department of Water Resources Sustainability Program, and then just touch on some near-term actions that we're working on within the department. Back in 2014, the legislature passed what we now call the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA, as we lovingly have come to call it. Part of that act included two Senate bills and an Assembly bill. But what I'd really like to focus on is the key guiding principle of the act, and that is that groundwater resources are best managed at the local level. And that's really what has been the common thread through this through the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and our sustainability program. Now, the Sustainable Groundwater Act provides a framework that encompasses the local's role and the state's role. The framework that the act provides is the applicability, as well as providing key definitions, and then also assigning deadlines. The local's role is to establish the GSA, or Groundwater Sustainability Agency. They also develop the powers and authorities for managing this GSA, as well as developing the sustainability plans, or GSP. They also are responsible for meeting the deadlines set by the legislation. Now, the state's role is more of a supportive role. We also are in a position of developing regulations, so we are sort of defining the rules for the way agencies will interact with SGMA. We provide technical and planning assistance. We also will be the evaluators of the GSPs, so we'll evaluate and assess the groundwater sustainability plans. And in some cases, there will be cases where state intervention will be required. I'm not going to touch on that today. I'll leave that to my colleague Eric Akhtal of the board to elaborate on what state intervention will look like. So part of SGMA is that there are high, medium, and low and very low priority basins. What SGMA has specified is that the high and medium priority basins throughout the state, which account for about 127 of the 515 basins, are required to have groundwater sustainability plans. Now, in the Lahontan region, a lot of the high and medium priority basins are covered by adjudications, which with an adjudication, it sort of sidesteps some of the requirements of SGMA. There still are reporting requirements, and those reporting requirements will be similar to what watermasters are typically used to reporting on. And I think Eric will be talking a little bit more about, Sam will be talking a little bit more about adjudications. So there are some key dates that I'd like to keep in mind with SGMA. By 2017, all groundwater sustainability agencies are supposed to be identified. By 2020, for basins designated as critically overdraft, the groundwater sustainability plans will need to be in place. Other high and medium priority basins will have till 2022 to have their plans in place. Now, the long-term goal is to reach sustainability by 2040. Now, if there's any question as to what a critically overdraft basin is, it's defined as a basin that is subject to critical conditions of overdraft when the continuation of present management practices would result in adverse effects, be it to environmental, social, or economic impacts. The SGMA provides the Department of Water Resources and statewide with new authorities and tools. So it provides the process for requesting basin boundary adjustments throughout the state. also authorizes the creation of groundwater sustainability agencies for local agencies. And it empowers those groundwater sustainability agencies with the ability to register groundwater wells, measure extractions, report on those extractions, assess fees. And another important note with SGMA is that comes along with it is that agencies going out to establish or produce a groundwater sustainability plan is it exempts them from the CEQA process. So that helps speed things along for establishing those plans. So the Department of Water Resources has been provided with the authority to develop guidelines for establishing or adjusting basin boundary throughout the state. Now, some of the key questions that we've had that we've kept in mind through these basin boundary regulations are: will the proposed adjusted basins result in sustainable groundwater management? Obviously, that would be optimal to achieve with basin boundary adjustments. Also, has the necessary technical information and justification been provided for such a basin boundary adjustment? And lastly, has the GSA, or Groundwater Sustainability Agency, coordinated with other agencies, GSAs, local agencies within their basin to make sure that the implementation of their new boundaries might not affect adversely the basin boundaries of other GSAs. So, SGMA also provides the DWR with the authority to produce regulations for the review and assessment of groundwater sustainability plans. So some of the questions we're looking at as we develop these regulations are the GSAs collecting, managing, and analyzing data appropriately to evaluate long-term sustainability? Are basins with multiple GSPs coordinating effectively? Does implementation of one GSP affect adversely the development of an adjacent basin's GSP? Is a GSP implementing their objectives, meeting milestones, and achieving sustainability within the basin? And these are some of the questions guiding the guidelines. Lastly, it would if these guidelines are not being met or the requirements aren't being met, there would be an opportunity for the State Board to enforce corrective actions as needed. So DWR's implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, part of that is implementing our sustainability program. We have a strategic plan available on our website which outlines and describes the responsibilities that the Department of Water Resources is taking to implement the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. I encourage you to go to our website and check that out. It outlines very specifically what we are going to be doing to meet those requirements of SGMA. DWR's Sustainable Groundwater Management Program has several different components, one of those being the providing state and local state assistance to in the form of technical assistance or planning assistance. We are also tasked with developing the framework for sustainable groundwater management, and also providing assistance in the form of financial assistance. Proposition 1 has what was passed, obviously, and part of that comes the planning grant program. $100 million available for planning grants. Our first cycle of those planning grants is now out for public comment. The guidelines and PSP are out for public comment right now, with that public comment period closing October 5th. And we plan to have a meeting out in Riverside, public meeting, to take in public comments on the draft guidelines and PSP on September 30th. We expect final guidelines in October of this year, and final awards we're shooting for March of 2016. And one of the key program components that the Department of Water Resources is implementing is communication and outreach. This has been critical to developing the regulations. We have a practitioners advisory panel, which we have met almost monthly now to work on the guidelines for the development of development of the guidelines for the basin boundary adjustments. Some of the near-term actions for SGMA, well, as I mentioned, we're developing the regulations for the basin boundary adjustments. We'll be updating those basin the basin prioritization. SGMA initially released their initial basin prioritization for the 515 basins throughout the state. We anticipate updating that prioritization in the I think it's by January of this year. It could be further. It might be in the June time frame. And then we're going to be identifying the basins subject to conditions of critical overdraft. We've already submitted our draft list of those critically overdraft basins. In fact, yesterday we met with the California Water Commission to discuss our list of critically overdraft basins and the progression of those designations. Lastly, we're going to be developing the regulations for the groundwater sustainability plans. And we anticipate having GSP regulations, draft regulations by November of this year, and the final regulations in June of 2016. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleagues here at the...
See if there's any questions first, Brian. Are there any questions from the board? And then we'll go to the audience. No questions? Yes, sir. I saw your hand.
Yeah, I had a question about the former...
Could you stand and identify yourself?
Dwayne Chisholm, Assistant General Manager for the Antelope Valley Eastern Water Agency. When there's this new agency that's been formed in order to create and manage the plan, when there is dispute amongst the various stakeholders and others within that, how is that resolved, is there any guidelines to who has to be in, who has to be not, what happens when there isn't, a unified consensus of what this agency is, who the members are, how they vote, and all these kinds of things?
Sure, that's a good question, because we are encountering that now with multiple agencies stepping up to be groundwater sustainability agencies. As a state agency, we're not setting any sort of guidelines for that. We're leaving that to the locals to figure out. We don't want to be viewed as taking sides.
Is there any criteria that outline how these are supposed to be formed, or who's supposed to be involved or not involved?
There are criteria in the legislation for what agencies can be a GSA and which ones cannot. Recently, there was SB 13, I believe, that was passed that is prohibiting the overlapping of GSA boundaries. So that's it's giving some guidance there. I haven't read that Senate bill yet, so I'm not. There may be some additional guidance in there, but it's definitely prohibiting the overlapping of those boundaries. I'm sorry, I don't have anything more for you because, like I said, we don't want to be viewed as taking sides. We want to leave that up to the locals to figure out. It's kind of going along the idea that groundwater is best managed at the local level.
Yes, Dr. Horn.
Well, that brings up a question in my mind: is could groups that are in an area that are having trouble figuring out what the planning boundary looks like, could they together apply for a planning grant to help them, to help facilitate the conversation to figure that out? Is that an appropriate use for a planning grant?
I would have to look. It sounds like a reasonable use of funds for a planning grant. I'd have to look at our guidelines. I do have our guidelines here. I don't want to start thumbing through it up here, but I could look into it after I sit down and answer your question.
Fully. Really answer, give him the information.
But you had mentioned the word facilitation. We do have facilitation services through our department.
Okay.
We have a contract with two different vendors to provide facilitation services for those discussions. It's to provide that neutrality. To help guide those discussions, and that's
Could help.
If you, I'm sorry, sir. I forget your name, but if you, I'll give you my card. I could definitely get you information on facilitation services. That's something that will that can help facilitate those discussions.
Any other questions for Brian?
Yes, ma'am.
Please stand and identify yourself.
Catherine Rubin with the Los Angeles Department of Public Health. If you would mind just going over the deadlines one more time.
Sure. Deadlines for what
are you talking about? The draft code.
So the basin boundary regulations. We expect the draft. The draft regulations were completed in July of this year. We expect. The public comment period ended on September 4th. We expect final regulations on January 1st of 2016. Now, as far as updating the basin prioritization, I don't have a specific date on that. I can get back to you on that. I should have wrote that down. Identifying the basins subject to conditions of critical overdraft. We are in discussions right now of finalizing that list. I don't have a date for you for that as well. I can look into that and get back to you. And then the GSP, the Groundwater Sustainability Plan regulations. We expect the draft regulations November 2016. 2015, and June 1st of 2016 we'll have the final regs. Yeah.
Okay, and you can fill out a speaker's card for the coach. Anyone else have any questions for Brian before we bring up our next guest? Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank
Brian.
You.
Thank you.
So there is a laser.
It's the round button.
There it goes.
Okay. And then the arrows are falling.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Cox and members of the board. My name is Eric Ekdahl. I'm the program manager for the State Water Resources Control Board's new groundwater management program. I'm here with one of my staff, Sam Olin Bryan, and we'll give you a brief overview of the State Water Board's role in the new Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA. Kind of divided up into four basic sections, and I'll talk a little bit about what got us to sustainable groundwater management. I'll show a couple slides, and I'll skip through it pretty quickly, but it gives an illustration of what things look like and kind of what drove us to this legislation. It's the first significant piece of groundwater legislation in well over 100 years. There have been some other components, AB 1938 or SB 1938 and AB 3030 plans that developed groundwater management plans. But SGMA is a new game. I'll do a little bit about SGMA overview, and during that time, I'll turn it over to Sam, and he'll give a description of where SGMA applies in Region 6. And then we'll come back at the end and talk about the board and DWR coordination. SGMA sets up a rather interesting approach to two agencies working together. It does happen in state government, and this is... another example of it will be an interesting progress. And then we'll touch very briefly on other program work, things that are going on. So to begin, what brought us to SGMA? I think everyone at this point is probably familiar with these two figures, one showing the snowpack in February 2014, the other showing the snowpack in February 2015. And as you can see, in 2015, there's no snow. You know, it's the lowest snowpack. I think there was just a report released earlier this week saying that this is probably the lowest snowpack in 500 years, looking at tree ring chronologies and some paleoclimate work. Interestingly, you can see it's actually greener in this picture than it was in this picture. 2014 was drier. We actually had a fair amount of rain in 2014. It was just very warm. None of it stayed as snow, and so it all fell and kind of ran off very quickly. We didn't have this long-term reserve that we typically have in the winters. So this is kind of natural forcing. You know, there's climatic conditions, basically drought, that have made the water supply situation in California a little bit precarious, especially over the last 4 years. There are also state factors. So this is a graph showing population in California from 1900 to 2012. We started off in 1900, you know, only maybe 1 or 2 million people in California. Now I'll show where we are now. We're about 38 or 39 million people in California. We've had explosive population growth. During that time, California has invested in really world-class, state-of-the-art water storage and conveyance efforts, but the timing of it really was focused on a scenario when California's population was a little bit different. So, let's see, Shasta Dam was developed when California's population was about 8 million people. Delta Mendota was about 12. California Aqueduct, maybe 18. And the last major surface water storage structure was about 1971 or 72 with Oroville Dam. And California had a population of about 20 million people. Today we're at 38, with an estimated population in 2020 somewhere between 42 and 47, probably on the lower end now. You know, these estimates are pulled together looking at the previous decade and during different economic times. The point of this is that throughout the state, our water conveyance and water storage capture and movement protocols or efforts really haven't kept pace with the change in the state's population. We're plumbed for a different climate scenario, and we're plumbed for a different population scenario. Now, during that time, there has been a significant expansion in groundwater storage, and so I don't want to minimize the efforts that have gone on. There are other things that the state has done. There are other things that the locals have done, and those efforts have been tremendously successful. But when we talk about the big storage efforts, those really happened, you know, during a different time. There's also local efforts that have driven changes in water use and water need. If we look at the Central Valley in 1946 and the Salinas Valley, this was from the SBX21 nitrate report developed by UC Davis in 2013. What this shows, and I don't expect people to actually be able to read this, but basically the light green color is open or undeveloped land. There's no agriculture there. The kind of tannish yellow is field crops, including hay and just open rangeland. So in much of the Central Valley, you can see the purple is vineyards and the orange is citrus, appropriately. You know, there was definitely agriculture in the Central Valley, but a lot of it was open, and a lot of the agriculture in here was essentially hay and alfalfa and forage crops for livestock. We skip forward to 2010, things look very different. Basically, you can see a huge expansion of agriculture in the Central Valley. A lot of it, the light pink that you can see throughout here is tree and nut crops, so things that harden water demand, things that you can't fallow from year to year. You see the huge explosion of vegetable crops in the Salinas Valley, so things like lettuce and strawberries. And you have a different set of water needs and a different set of water uses than you did back in the 40s. Or the 50s, you know, this hardening of demand, and so there's different needs on different resources, on a limited set of resources. And what that's resulted in, this is kind of for the lower San Joaquin Valley, is plummeting groundwater, especially during conditions of drought. This is from a report published by the Department of Water Resources in 2014. The dark red color is essentially showing spring-to-spring conditions between 2013 and 2014, where groundwater elevation has dropped 60 or so feet. That's a lot. You know, spring should be the high-level mark, so during a time from spring to spring when you have a decrease of 60 feet, it's indicative of plummeting groundwater conditions. These have been going on in some places for a lot of years, and there was recognition that a statewide effort was needed to essentially stop the continuing overdraft of California's groundwater resources and to help ensure that the groundwater that is there was sustainably used into the future so that future Californians have a resource to use. The result was SGMA, as Brian mentioned. It's a package of three bills listed here. The governor signed it on September 16th, 2014, so SGMA was 1 year old and 1 day today. It became effective January 1st, and as Brian mentioned, this was in a signing statement by the governor. A central feature of these bills is the recognition that groundwater management in California is best accomplished locally. And as Brian mentioned, it's written all throughout SGMA. If you look at how SGMA is structured, it's really driven so that locals have every opportunity to directly manage their resources and to directly manage their future in terms of groundwater sustainability. The bill also does recognize, though, that where local efforts aren't successful, there needs to be a real and credible state backstop, so that if the locals don't succeed, there is a scenario where things just don't continue to get worse and worse and worse, but that the state can directly intervene and start directly managing groundwater resources. And that's what we'll talk about kind of the rest of the talk. The basics, before I turn it over to Sam, requires formation of sustainability agencies and development of groundwater sustainability plans in 127 high and medium priority basins across California. And Sam will show a picture of this in the next slide, I think. It authorizes new management tools for local agencies, and these really revolve around fees, monitoring, and management. So being able to directly coordinate who can pump, when they can pump, they can require fees for facilitation, they can meter, they can require metering requirements for their agencies and for their plans. Basically, a whole new set of local authorities that can directly be used to manage groundwater at the local scale. It defines a time frame for accomplishing these goals. We'll talk more about this in a little bit. It provides an alternative if users can show the basin is sustainable. So it does essentially provide a carve-out. If you can show that your basin has been sustainably managed for generally 10 years or more, you don't have to go through the groundwater sustainability route. You don't have to form a groundwater sustainability agency. There may be scenarios where you can use an existing groundwater management plan or an AB 3030 plan. So if you are being sustainably managed, you don't have to go through this process. This is really being directed at places that aren't being sustainably managed or aren't managing or haven't even thought about how to manage their groundwater resources. And then lastly, it creates a state backstop. So I'll turn it over to Sam Bowl and Brian for a couple of slides. We've developed regional liaisons throughout for the entire state. We have 8 staff in the groundwater management program, and we've kind of divvied up a state one or so for each one of the regions. Sam is the liaison for Region 6 South, and we actually have a different liaison for Region 6 North, but she's doing drought curtailments for the next couple of months. So, you know, it's kind of an influx a little bit, but for now, I'll turn it over to Sam.
Thanks, Eric, and thanks for having me. Letting me give some information on SGMA today. As Eric said, I'm the regional liaison, so it's going forward, if there's any questions that come up, feel free to email me or call me anytime, and I'll try and help answer them. Teeing off the basics, one of the first questions is how SGMA applies to an area or region, and that's kind of driven by the CASGEM prioritization process. So this is a process that the Department of Water Resources, DWR, developed back in 2009 for developing their statewide groundwater elevation monitoring program. And then that prioritization process got rolled into SGMA. And so that kind of drives how the requirements of SGMA are applied, and also how and when or where the board can step in as state intervention. So there's high, as Brian mentioned, high, medium, low, and very low priorities, based on 8 factors, and those factors are driven by mostly population and extraction volumes. But to make it kind of a fair scoring, it's per square mile or percentage, so it's kind of can be uniformly applied across the state. And so you'll notice in Region 6 there's a lot of very low priority basins. If you go to the next slide, shown in the very light green. It's not to say they're unimportant, it's just that there's low populations there. There's not a high number of total wells per square mile or a high number of public supply wells per square mile. And that kind of drove a lot of the score. Each factor can get up to 5 points, 8 factors. Here, there's actually only 6 that fall in the category of high and medium. on this map, if you have the handout, I've also showed the military installations. It's an important consideration that state law doesn't really apply to them, and we can't tell them what to do. And so there are a fair number of military installations here, and that kind of drives how Sigma is applied in those areas. Also of note is, as we zoom in, there's another kind of question asked in how the basins are prioritized, but once you determine where you're in one of those higher medium priorities, the timelines, which were asked about earlier, is driven by kind of the condition of the basin. And that first condition question is, are you in a condition of critical overdraft? Which is on this slide, a little out of order. In the south, there's a new draft list of critically overdrafted basins, and the Indian Wells Valley is on that draft list that's currently out for public comment. And so this basin will have to kind of move faster than other basins that aren't critically overdrafted. And so their deadline is they have to have their plan adopted and in place by mid-2020, as opposed to 2022. And so that kind of will force them to act faster, but also if they don't, the board does not have to make a finding that basin is in long-term overdraft. DWR has kind of already made the finding for us, and so it's almost more of a streamlined process as we step in. We know there's problems there already. It's kind of on the record. And so if we need to, we can move slightly faster. Going back to the north region, there's two basins that are currently in medium priority. And so that's the Tahoe South Valley and then the Martez Valley basins around Lake Tahoe. Also worth noting is Honey Lake is a low priority basin, but it's kind of right on the cusp of the scoring. And as Brian mentioned, the prioritization process is based on scoring, and that will be updated. And the way the prioritization works, it's a ranking, and so all of the basins are, you know, sorted and listed in that ranking. So when you change the priority of one, it shifts the priority of all of them. And so there's going to be a reshuffling. And so it's kind of good to be aware of the basins that are kind of at the cusp. If you're, you know, a low, but your score is kind of right at that cutoff threshold of being medium, it's worth noting. Honey Lake's one of the ones that are close. Fremont Valley in the south is also another one. It's a low priority. It's safe to say that a lot of the very low are not going to be jumping up to a high priority based on rescoring. But just something to be aware of, that when that reprioritization comes in the next year or so, that may change the playing field a little. And then the final slide I had was adjudications. And there's a Mojave River adjudication, as everyone knows, for this area. Sigma says that the requirements of Sigma don't apply to adjudicated areas. So on here I have one hatching showing the boundaries of the Mojave adjudication. But also Sigma calls out a few special cases that aren't yet completed in the adjudication, the Antelope Valley. And so that will be treated like an adjudication once it completes, basically. Worth noting is that Antelope Valley, a little to our relief, lines up well with the Bulletin 118 boundaries. And so there's no kind of fringes or overlaps, because only the portions within the adjudicated area are exempt from CEQA, or from Sigma. Sorry. So Mojave has some questions with these kind of fringe areas that fall outside of the adjudicated boundaries. And also another one worth noting is the long-term water agreement between LADWP and Inyo County is not all of the Owens Valley Basin. And so on maps, it's shown as the whole valley, but it's kind of an open question is where the boundaries of that legal agreement fall, and the exemption from Sigma would only be within those boundaries. And so, I mean, it's the middle portion. I don't think it covers the bottom or top of the Owens Valley Basin. And so, but within those boundaries, they're exempt from Sigma as well. And that was all I had. Thanks.
Thank you. Worth noting, in addition, you know, future adjudications, the basins that Sam highlighted in that last slide are essentially exempt from Sigma. future adjudications are not exempt from CEQA. So if you set forth a new adjudication, you still have to comply with all the requirements of CEQA, and you may end up in a scenario where you have two kind of competing paths going forward. There were two bills that were just passed by the legislature, SB 266 and AB 1390. They haven't yet been signed by the governor. We don't know if they will be or not. They may be. That streamline the adjudication process and kind of tie it into the CEQA process going forward. So look to see if those pass, and it will kind of provide a new framework for adjudications going forward.
So what would be the incentive to go through an adjudication?
That's a good question.
The new
legislation, I think, provide a rather large disincentive to go through an adjudication. The nice thing is that it does solidify a groundwater right. I mean, essentially an adjudication is a court-mandated description of what groundwater rights look like. And CEQA may or may not do that. There are scenarios where maybe your sustainability plan can be walked over to a courthouse and formalized through an adjudication process, but otherwise it doesn't have quite the same weight as determining groundwater rights. In fact, CEQA is very clear in saying it does not determine groundwater rights. An adjudication does. Key CEQA requirements. So the first timeline that's important for us, at least, is that groundwater sustainability agencies must be formed in those high and medium priority basins by 2017, specifically June 30th, 2017. Those sustainability agencies can be comprised of one or more agencies working together under an MOA or an MOU or a joint powers authority or agreement. If there's more than one GSA per basin, though, those GSAs must come up with a formal coordination agreement between each other. Essentially, CEQA says that you can fragment your basin however you want, but if you're going to fragment, you have to coordinate with one another and come to agreement on some certain key principles, how you're going to collect the data, data units, and things like that. I think you'll see more information on how that coordination has to work in DWR sustainability plan regulations that should be out shortly. The next important date is that those GSAs have to prepare groundwater sustainability plans. You sometimes see these abbreviated as GSPs. Those must include measurable objectives, implementation milestones, annual reports, including water use, extraction, and change in storage. Those sustainability plans are due in 2020 for those basins that are in critical overdraft. They're due in 2022 for everyone else. So of the 127 basins that are subject to CEQA, I think there are 19 that are in critical overdraft. Those are due in 2020. Everyone else is due in 2022. The other key CEQA requirements is that the basin achieves sustainability 20 years after plan adoption, and that those plans essentially prevent undesirable results. Unfortunately, the legislation defines both sustainability and undesirable results, where sustainability is defined as management and use of groundwater in a manner that can be maintained during the planning and implementation horizon without causing undesirable results. There are six undesirable results listed. One is essentially the chronic lowering of groundwater levels, not including overdraft during a drought. So there's the recognition that if you are storing water in your basin during times of plenty, you can and should deplete it during times of drought. It's essentially your bank account. There's reductions in groundwater storage, seawater intrusion, degradation of water quality, significant and unreasonable land subsidence, and surface water depletions adversely impacting beneficial uses. Notably, CEQA does not define what significant and unreasonable is. So this is going to most likely be a locally driven decision process, a locally driven definition, where they'll be able to set in their sustainability plans. This is what we think is locally significant and unreasonable for us. That would then go to the Department of Water Resources, where they'll do some preliminary review and essentially decide whether or not that passes the LAF test. The legislation also defines the state backstop. So there are four triggers that we'll discuss. If some of those undesirable results occur, then presumably that plan or that basin could be kicked over to the state board for further work. And the first trigger point is in June 30, 2017. If an area in one of those higher medium priority basins fails to form a groundwater sustainability agency. And at that point, those areas that are uncovered, and I'll talk about those in a future slide, have to begin directly reporting extraction and well location data to the State Water Board. We can prepare to begin the probationary designation process, which is a more formal way of describing how the board will interact with that basin at that time. January 30th, 2020, those basins that are in critical overdraft that simply fail to form a sustainability plan are subject to state intervention. Additionally, the Department of Water Resources can decide in some cases that that sustainability plan might not be adequate. And in those cases also, the department can turn those basins over to the board for additional intervention. That's true also for all of the basins that weren't in critical overdraft, but the timeline there is 2022 as opposed to 2020. An additional key finding for those basins that aren't in long-term overdraft or that aren't in critical conditions of overdraft, the board must make an additional finding in 2022 that the basin's in long-term overdraft. So that's an additional step for us. Lastly, and this is an item that we get a lot of questions on, probationary basin designations can begin where a sustainability plan is inadequate, as found by the Department of Water Resources, and there are significant depletions of interconnected surface water. So we can look at places where groundwater pumping is directly affecting surface water flows, and in cases where that interaction is affecting beneficial uses, step in and intervene. But again, we can only do that upon reference by the department where a plan is inadequate or failing. A key point to remember is that in all triggering events, intervention is the direct result of failure of locals to create a GSA or to develop a sustainability plan. So there's no scenario where the board can just decide on their own that we're going to intervene. It has to be through a direct action of the locals or an inadequacy of a plan as found by the Department of Water Resources. So what are the State Water Board rules throughout that process? We've kind of outlined, you know, here are these trigger points. Well, what are we actually going to do in those trigger points? And this is an evolving question. You know, we're working on it. They've given us a long time to try and figure things out. It's 2015 now. We can't really start intervening until 2017, maybe at the earliest, more likely 2020 or even 2022. But we're starting to frame together, you know, what we're going to look at. And the first two things that we're asking, you know, As the state backstop, we have two primary roles. One is going to be as a data manager, and then depending on what we find looking at that data, we'll have potentially another role as a basin manager, and that's where we're directly intervening and managing the basin. Our third role is coordination with DWR. As we mentioned earlier, this is kind of a unique setting or a unique set of legislation where DWR is writing the regulations and kind of setting the framework, and the board in many ways is acting as the enforcement entity. So we're going to have to very tightly coordinate with one another and define, you know, what does success look like, what does board interaction look like, how are these regulations that they developed going to affect us, and how are we going to be able to work within them, and how are we going to implement the backstop? The role as a data manager. The first opportunity we have is for areas we call potentially unmanaged areas, or PUMAs. For those who have heard me do this talk before, I usually have a little joke about the acronym PUMA. It hasn't caught on quite the way that I've liked it to, but you know, please take it forward going forth and use PUMA instead of white spot. The other term that people have been using is white spot area, or places that aren't covered by a GSA. They're unmanaged. The trigger point there, if you don't have a GSA, the board can begin collecting data in July 1st, 2017. The data that we can collect is spelled out in statute. We can look for the place of extraction, so it's where the well is located. We can look at monthly records of volume of extractions, purpose of use, place of use, and then there's this little kind of thing at the end, any other information required to designate a basin as probationary and write interim plans. That's kind of a catch-all. We might have to do regulations to actually implement this part, but basically, the way we're reading it is we can get all this stuff through existing legislation. If we think there's more that we need, we can ask for it and likely get it. To do this, we're going to need some sort of electronic reporting system. This is a very preliminary map of the number of wells per section where we think they may be subject to signal reporting requirements, so wells greater than 2 acre feet per year. In some scenarios, we think that we maybe can look at wells that extract less than 2 acre feet per year, so that would include domestic wells if we needed to. But at a minimum, we look at wells that extract more than 2 acre feet per year. The little high dark orange areas basically say wells of 500 to 2,000 wells per section. So this is a huge number of wells. If we had to go in and start directly managing this area here, we're talking about thousands and thousands of wells. We don't have the staff or the resources to get paper records. We're going to need to do this electronically, some sort of system where people can self-report. So it'll be an electronic PUMA recording system. We have to think longer term, though, and the point of collecting that data is that eventually, someday, we may need it to write an interim plan. So we collect the data, we look at what's being extracted, we look at a water budget, and that's how we would effectively manage the basin going forward. It's going to need to track fees. Anything that starts reporting to the board is likely going to have a fee associated with it. We're required under statute to essentially recover costs associated with the state backstop. There's going to be a public interface. The public should be able to come and look at this website and be able to pull the data that's submitted to us. Our rough timeline, it's an ambitious timeline, but it's kind of legislatively driven. We need to have something functional by July 1st, 2017, when those first PUMAs could potentially come forward. So that means beta testing by January 1st, 2017, development next year, and we're in the scoping process right now. It's a little bit of a different system in that, a lot of times we develop databases that are either informational, something like GeoTrack or Gamma, where you can come and look at all the data that the board collects and redistribute it. But the PUMA system is going to only be used if you mess up. So it's a little bit of a different outreach process where you have to go and say, we hope you never use this process. We hope you never have to see it. But if you really mess up, you want to take a look at it and tell us what you think about it. So it'll be a little bit of a challenge going forward. Our next role is as a basin manager. So we collect the data and we look at what's going on in the area and we say, all right, we need to take a firmer hand. We need to designate you as a probationary basin and move towards directly writing an interim plan for you. So we develop fees, we designate probationary basins. That probationary basin would lead to an interim sustainability plan. And that sustainability plan would be in effect until locals came up to speed. The whole idea is that you take over temporarily, but it's called an interim plan because we want locals to take direct responsibility. And so there are a number of off-ramps throughout this process where if locals do come up to speed, the board is required to back off and essentially give control back over to the locals. I have a little thing on fees. I'm going to kind of skip this. Basically, the fees were kind of in parallel with our reporting system. They have to go hand in hand. DWR key activities. A lot of the early work is focused on the department. Brian touched on much of it. They're revising the basin boundary regulations. Public comment just closed 2 weeks ago. They should have a final draft in the next month or so. They're identifying basins in critical overdraft, and Brian again said, they've done this. They have a public version out. I believe there's public meetings later this month. Hopefully, they're going to finalize these relatively quickly. They're updating basin priorities. I think this is most likely in mid to late 2017, corresponding with an update to Bulletin 118, where they define and spell out what those basin boundaries look like and how they're defined. The key one is regulations for sustainability plans and how these plans will be reviewed. And this is really what's going to drive SGMA for the next 20 to 25 years. It's going to spell out what has to go into a plan and how the department is going to review that information that does come in and judge adequacy in those plans. So this is also going to set up when the board can intervene and how that intervention is triggered. It's going to set up what baseline looks like, and it's going to set up triggers and thresholds and perhaps contingency plans set up in those sustainability plans. There is a huge communication and outreach effort. DWR has really gone above and beyond, I think, in terms of doing outreach. They have 19 or 20 different advisory panels. They've had dozens of community meetings throughout the state. They'll have dozens more as this process in particular goes forward. And they've been very open. If you have questions or comments, you know, just send them an email or give them a call, and they've been very responsive. And lastly, as Brian mentioned, there's Proposition 1 grant guidelines and funding criteria. There's $100 million in planning grants specifically tied into groundwater management planning. I also want to emphasize that, you know, people should look beyond what's in Prop 1. A lot of the SGMA efforts that are going to occur in the next 5 to 10 years are going to look for new sources of water. And I put new in quotes. That could include recycled water. It could include stormwater capture. A lot of different things could fit into funding criteria, not only at DWR, but looking at what the state board has through the Division of Financial Assistance, looking at our state revolving loans, and trying to figure out all the different things that could provide funding for SGMA efforts. It's not just tied to this $100 million. We have a number of coordination roles. We have several coordination teams that we've set up with DWR's Sacramento office. DWR is responsible for evaluating and accepting the sustainability plans, and the board is responsible for implementing the backstop, identifying probationary basins, writing interim basin plans, and managing those basins. In some cases, the board can request that the department conduct investigations and provide technical assistance. And in some cases, the board cannot designate a probationary basin, so we can't implement the backstop until the department has made a finding that a plan is inadequate. So there has to be tight coordination between everything that we do going forward. In summary, you know, I didn't really talk about focusing on existing authorities. SGMA's there, and as I kind of outlined in those triggers, there's some avenues where we can directly get involved. There's some avenues where we actually can't until DWR moves forward. In addition, SGMA only applies to these 127 basins. There are other authorities that the state board and regional boards have. If there are low or very low priority basins that need work or need board review, there are ways to do it. There's the waste and unreasonable use doctrine enshrined in the California Constitution, the public trust doctrine, Water Code Section 2100, which has typically been applied in areas with seawater intrusion, but presumably could be applied to anywhere where there are significant water quality impacts. And then there's subterranean streams. More importantly, we want to support DWR and the locals in the early years. You know, the board doesn't have a big legislative role defined until 2017, and even then, it's questionable how many of these PUMA areas we'll actually get. If the counties step up, it's possible that we won't have any. So then our role is really pushed forward another 3 years to 2020. So we want to be able to be used as a technical resource. If there are things that we can help locals do, if there are things that we can help DWR do, we want to be there, be available, and be open for questions. We want to know the field and be prepared to step in strategically. That means we don't want to just jump in and start wildly swinging as soon as 2017 or 2020 comes along. We have to know who's struggling, who's making the effort, and where our intervention efforts are going to be best realized or are most important. That kind of fits in this last one, be judicious, strategic, and effective when acting. And we want to use a light touch, but we want to be an effective touch. We want to be a credible threat. And there's a concern, I think, we've heard from some stakeholders that the board is a paper tiger, that we're not actually going to follow through, we're not actually going to intervene. And we want to be very clear that this is a big priority for the state board and that we are looking to do what we need to do in 2017 or 2020 or 2022 to make sure that groundwater is sustainably managed going forward. And with that, I have my name up there and Sam's name up there. If you have questions, please, you know, send us an email or give us a call. And we do have an email list that we blast things out. I do want to mention one other thing. We have a series of SGMA workshops set up for the month of October. I should have had a slide on it, but I don't. The first one is October 21st, and that's at LA Valley Community College. Then October 22nd in Visalia, October 27th in Sacramento, that will be webcast, so people that can't make it to some of these places will be able to watch. And then we'll likely have a follow-up November 5th in Reading, but a kind of smaller or combined meeting. We're still working on the final dates for that. And that's kind of divided up into two parts, the first for local public agencies, and the second is open to the public, so anyone's invited. We encourage people to, you know, tell their constituents, let people know, and we can send out information going forward. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
That's a great presentation. Thank you. Eric, let me turn to the board. Are there any questions from the board? Mr. Jardine?
Well, I'd be very interested in the Sacramento webcast, and my only concern is in our area up by Lake Tahoe, everything drains basically east into Nevada, and we're regulated under the Alpine Federal Court decree, but that's only surface waters, and there have been plans in the past to export water from Alpine County to other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like some follow-up questions offline about exporting water.
Okay. Yeah, we can follow up offline, or you know, basically GSAs do have the authority to effectively regulate how groundwater is used in that basin. And if they want to set up protocols that discuss exporting water, they may do so. I also want to point out that counties have always had that authority and a significant amount of authority to regulate extractions, and that may be a more direct approach at looking at that issue.
We have passed an ordinance regarding that, and but that's followed on the heels of Sierra County and others. So I'll follow up with you later.
Okay.
Mr. Pumphrey?
No.
Dr. Horn?
No, thank you for the presentation.
Mr. Dyes?
I'd like to echo Mr. Jardine's concerns about basin export. I think part of sustainability is keeping water in the basin for nature pool. Thank you.
Any comments from our public?
Yeah, I'm Mike Plasiak. I'm the museum manager for the South Mahon Watershed. The question I've got is, were an intervention to occur, what's your initial thoughts, and what would be the water board or regional board's role?
The regional board's role, we're still framing what that's going to look like. I think initially, when those sustainability plans are being developed, I think there's a role for the regional board in terms of water quality. You know, a lot of the regional expertise is held at the regions. The GSAs are going to have some sort of comprehensive view of what the basin looks like when you're starting. You know, what is water quality baseline? And that's going to have to factor in how they plan over the next 20 to 50 years. So there's some role there. We're still kind of talking about it and what that formally looks like. Is that directly written into the sustainability plans, or is it something that's less formal and you know, we just kind of work with them to kind of review what they're doing and make sure they have the right kinds of data? So there's definitely a role there. When it comes to the direct intervention aspects, I think it's going to focus on what failed the basin. You know, is it a lack of organization and a lack of developing a plan, period? Then, again, you know, we're going to come to the regional boards and look for expertise on water quality and other actions that are occurring in that basin. Are they failed because DWR found their plan inadequate? Well, then how did they find it inadequate? If it's for chronic lowering of groundwater, there may be less of a role for the regional boards in that case, although I think, you know, everyone is still involved because just having the input and the general expertise is going to be something that's really helpful for us going forward.
Mr. Booth.
Rich Booth with Water Board. Following up on Mike's question, could there be possibly an evolution of a good cop, bad cop scenario where the regional board and their association with the local districts act as the good cop to try to help if there is a problem with getting a GSA together, whereas the state board and your unit would be the bad cop as the backstop that we, as the regional level, don't want to have to call you in?
I don't see
as
that
a strategy.
It's a possibility. Anything's a possibility. I don't see it as likely for two reasons. One, there may be a question about whether or not
the regions are viewed as the good cop or the bad cop. Sometimes it goes the other way. You know,
we're not used to that, you're right.
But you know, it gets to the question of what is the regional board role in setting up a sustainability agency. And in some places where you know the sustainability agency may be focused more on water quality as opposed to extractions, there's a more direct role. But where that sustainability agency is focused on extractions and declining groundwater levels, then the regional boards might not be as involved. There's going to have to be clear tie-in, though, between a lot of the board's regulatory efforts and things like irrigated lands, the salt nutrient management plans, these kind of things that are already doing regional water quality monitoring and data collection and organization. You know, the GSAs are going to have to be very tightly, not necessarily integrated, but communicative with those efforts.
Patty? I have a follow-up question. Some of the questions have been asked already. In one of your slides is present undesirable results of plan, including degradation of water quality and saltwater intrusion. That one's not our problem, but other regional boards' problem. But who makes that decision? Is it the locals, DWR, or someone else that decides that? And the follow-up question is, you mentioned that there's discussions ongoing about what a role, any guessing of a time when we'll have more coalescing of when?
I'll answer your second question first.
Okay.
Yes, DWR is working on their draft regulations, and I think once that framework is out, it will give a little bit of a clearer picture on kind of the elements that have to go into the sustainability plan and potential roles for the regional boards going forward. Brian mentioned maybe November for getting that draft plan. I think it's more likely January. Talking to some of the people in Sacramento, but hopefully November. I mean, the sooner the better. And so that'll kind of clarify some of that. The other question is, who defines significant and unreasonable, basically? And I think it's going to be a function of the locals and DWR. The way that we've talked about it is, you know, the locals need to be able to have the flexibility to define their own level of significant and unreasonable. And that's a true statement. You know, every basin is going to be a little bit different than another, and so a coastal basin that has seawater intrusion might not have the same types of issues that a high desert basin might have. You know, there's going to need to be flexibility. But the role that DWR plays, particularly in setting up their sustainability plan regulations, is providing a framework. So we don't use the term minimum standards, but effectively minimum standards. You know, what are kind of the basic elements that have to go into definition of significant and unreasonable? Here's how we're going to frame out, you know, what unreasonable seawater intrusion looks like. Here's how we're going to frame out what unreasonable chronic lowering of groundwater conditions look like. And that's really going to be driven by what they put in their regulations and how they implement and review those plans within those regulations.
Any last questions? Yes, sir.
Dwayne Chisholm from the you mentioned in your discussion there that there are portions where there's an adjudication where it doesn't get all of the area. They're going to have to do one of these plans. Is that correct?
Potentially. So the Department of Water Resources is looking in their sustainability plans how to treat they call them fringe areas.
Right.
So places where, you know, 98% of the basin, there's a little sliver here. And
something,
You know, I think that in the end it's actually more straightforward than it might seem initially. And it will require some sort of coordination with maybe the county or some other kind of local public agency where, you know, you can set up some sort of demonstration that says, look, the adjudication covers this huge area. We have a little sliver here. We're going to work with the county. We identified zero wells in this sliver. If there is a well going in, we'll work with the county to make sure it's compatible with overall vision of sustainability for the basin. You know, maybe setting that forward in an MOU or a JPA is all it takes. I think there will be more direction once DWR publishes their draft regulations. So there's mechanisms to get at it. You can look and say, you know, that alternative section that we talked about where you can provide
evidence of 10 years of sustainability. Maybe that's an avenue. So there's opportunities there that don't necessarily mean you have to go the full-blown GSA, GSP route. That is a viable option, though. If people want to do that, they can.
I have a question for you, Eric. Are you looking at IRWIMP areas as possible GSA areas?
So there, I mean, that's a local decision, and from what we've heard, there are some places that will adopt an IRWIMP boundary for their GSA. Most of them aren't right now. Most of them are being driven on either water district or irrigation district boundaries, and in some cases, county boundaries. And I think that the way that SGMA is written, it really emphasizes county management. So there's some way to, you know, consolidate upwards to the county level. I think that's a great kind of size. Now, clearly, there's a lot of different options allowed under the law, but, you know, if you start thinking about economies of scale, whether or not a tiny little irrigation district or water district is going to be able to actually do the things required by SGMA, I think it's unlikely. So, you know, yeah, fragmentation is allowed, but it's probably not a good idea. That's my two cents, editorializing a little bit.
Well, this has been a great presentation. I, for one, like your acronym PUMA.
Very good.
Stick with it. It'll catch on. Trust me.
Very good.
Brian, Eric, and Sam, you have just a huge task before you, and we just appreciate you providing this information to us today. So thank you.
Great. Thank you.
And with that concludes our agenda for today. So we are adjourned. Thank you.